Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist, Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. April 1st has come and gone, and state lawmakers have still not agreed on a budget. New York's primary is just around the corner, and the presidential contenders are making their rounds through the state. We'll take a look at the campaigns of Jesse Jackson, Al Gore, and George Bush. And we'll talk with Fred Dicker about Governor Cuomo's role in welcoming these men to the state. We'll have all this state news and more, much more, coming up on this week's Legislative Gazette. This has been the latest state budget since 1982, when the legislature finished budget work on May 4th. As Brenda McMahon reports, after more than 2 weeks of negotiating the budget bill, state lawmakers are still deadlocked over the issue of asbestos removal funding.
Negotiations on a new state budget have collapsed again. The holdup this time is the insistence of state Republicans that their proposal to remove asbestos from New York schools be included in the budget for the 1988-89 fiscal year. The state Senate completed action on a bill that could have resulted in a state budget, but the legislation was immediately rejected by Governor Cuomo and Assembly Speaker Mel Miller. The Senate proposed a bill which contained a $50 million proposal to remove asbestos from schools. Cuomo said he would have rather had a less expensive and smaller program. The governor recently proposed $25 million toward that cause, but the proposal was rejected by the Senate. Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen, who's been involved with the negotiations from the start, says the Senate Republicans, especially the Long Island contingent, will not compromise on these proposals.
The governor proposed an asbestos removal program, and then the Senate went and made that permanent, made it much more costly, and they passed that. The Assembly says they have no interest in the asbestos program on such an expanded basis, and that they would only accept it as a closing issue, resolving all the budgetary issues, including a bond issue for transportation, housing, the TAP assistance, tuition assistance for colleges and universities, and the Liberty Scholarship Program with minority business enterprise generic law applying to all construction in the state. Now, those are the issues. Those are the five major issues in addition to local assistance that have not been agreed on, and we're just at an impasse. It's very frustrating because this whole thing is caused by, from our point of view, the greediness of a few people on Long Island. They haven't got anything. I don't think they're going to get anything of material importance for their districts, and yet school districts all over New York State are not getting their state aid payments, so they're having to go out and borrow money.
Another problem is the Senate's refusal to work on a package for local assistance and funding for minority business enterprise. Lundeen says the governor would accept either a comprehensive or a sketchy version of the plan in order to forward budget negotiations, but the Senate, again, will not comply.
The problem is that the Senate, Senator Anderson candidly says he can't pass the bare bones local assistance because he just doesn't have the votes in his conference, apparently still because of the insistence of these Long Island senators. I like them all individually, but they've really thrown a monkey wrench into the operations of the state of New York, and I think this impasse is likely to go on for some time.
As a result, budget negotiations are essentially where they were a week ago. Both the Senate and the Assembly have gone home for the weekend and plan to return on Monday. Lawmakers have already approved emergency legislation that would allow New York to make $56 million in Medicaid payments to health care providers. And many localities have also had to borrow money because the state funding has been delayed. This is the latest state budget since 1982, when the legislature finished budget work on May 4th. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brenda McMahon.
New York's primary is almost here, and the Democratic presidential candidates are coming to the Empire State vying for their share of its delegates. The most recent Marist College public opinion poll, which questions New York voters about their presidential preference, showed Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis gaining footage over Reverend Jesse Jackson. In the poll, Dukakis had 41% of the voters' support, compared to Jackson's 30%. Jesse Jackson was in town recently campaigning for the big April 19th win, where 255 delegates are at stake. Beth Engler has this report.
What do I want? I want to serve our nation. What do I want? I want to raise minimum wage for working people. What do I want? I want comparable worth and pay equity for women. What do I want? I want a national labor relations board that's a mediation and not a strike-breaking board. I want to fight a war against cocaine, crack, heroin, and PCP.
It was vintage Jesse Jackson as he made his way through the Capital District, just one of his campaign stops across the state. The candidate held a crowded noontime rally before an enthusiastic and vocal crowd of both black and white supporters. Reverend Jackson promised the crowd that he would do his best to put an end to discrimination, low wages, labor disputes, and corruption, and he blasted what he calls Reaganomics. At a news conference, Governor Mario Cuomo heaped praise on Jackson, but said the reverend suffered from the dumb blonde syndrome, in which potential voters think if a candidate demonstrates passion, there's little else. Cuomo says nothing could be further from the truth. However, the governor held to his pledge not to endorse anyone before the end of the primary season in June.
I believe that Jesse, Mike, or Al is the next president of the United States. Certainly one of them is the candidate of the Democratic Party. No one else. Jesse, Mike, or Al is going to be the candidate of the Democratic Party. I think the other two, who are not the candidates, will be perhaps the two most powerful supporting forces in the nation.
It was just fine with Jackson that Cuomo is not handing out an endorsement. Jackson says it should be up to the people.
If we cut off the process and discourage participation, it will limit our ability to be expansive enough to win in 1988.
Cuomo and Jackson met for about a half hour before the news conference. They discussed a Democratic revival of a dream and how to plan and pay for that dream. One of those issues is to fix roads and bridges in the nation.
I put forth a plan to pay for our infrastructure. We cannot massage Reaganomics and simply manage Reaganomics and get what is left of Reaganomics and, in fact, reinvest in our infrastructure and in our children.
Jackson refused to be drawn into the dispute over the alleged Tawana Brawley racial attack. The Dutchess County teenager claims she was abused by six white men, and her lawyers have called Cuomo a racist.
Well, I do not choose to comment on the merits of that case. It's being handled by credible lawyers. Certainly a matter involving that much tension and pain needs to be handled in a way that is measured and that does not create any more pain and division. In fact, we must heal the society to eliminate the incidences of violence based upon race and violence based upon sex.
It was much of the same when Jackson spoke to about 250 supporters at an Albany breakfast. The crowd cheered when he called for peace in the Middle East and South Africa. Jackson will be making appearances across the state over the next few days. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Beth Engler.
The Marist College public opinion poll also showed that New Yorkers didn't have too many good things to say about Senator Al Gore as a presidential contender. It showed he still has a higher negative than positive rating among the voters, and he's trailing behind both Jackson and Dukakis, Paul Rosenthal takes a look at Senator Gore's campaign in New York.
255 convention delegates are at stake on the Democratic side of the New York State presidential primary. Frontrunners Michael Dukakis and Jesse Jackson know it is an important battle. Tennessee Senator Albert Gore took his uphill battle to a crowd of hundreds of Democrats in the Capital District. Senator Gore knows that he's behind in the polls in New York State, and he believes that New York is a state where being the underdog is not that much of a problem.
I'm coming into your state, ladies and gentlemen, as an underdog in this contest. I believe you know that as well as I do. And you also know as well as I do that underdogs have frequently emerged victorious in races in New York State because this state has given a fair hearing to underdogs who have something to say, who believe in what they say, and are willing to fight for what they believe in. That's what I'm doing in this race. I want to put the White House back on the side of working men and women. I believe it's time for that kind of democratic approach to produce a democratic victory to recapture the White House in November of this year.
Gore has been looked at with bad eyes for taking shots in the past at the other Democratic contenders, but this time Gore attacked his potential rival in November, George Bush, and the Reagan administration, especially in their handling of the drug problem in this country.
We need an all-out war against drugs, which combines foreign policy and interdiction efforts and law enforcement and education and prevention with a single cabinet-level coordinator that focuses the attentions and energies of the President of the United States and the United States government on winning this war against drugs. The current administration declared war against drugs, and then less than a week later, they cut the money in half. The long-term costs of allowing this epidemic of drug abuse to continue cannot be ignored any longer. We have 5% of the population of the world in America. We are consuming 50% of the illegal and dangerous drugs in this world. We have a major problem in the United States, and we must confront it with presidential leadership, determined and effective in wiping out this drug abuse epidemic, and I pledge to you that I will lead that fight.
Before giving his address, Gore traveled throughout the crowd, shaking hands and greeting his supporters. Gore also noted that Governor Cuomo's statement that he will not accept a draft nomination at the convention will not affect Gore's campaign strategy.
Well, I think most people understood him clearly before now to say that he wasn't running, and I understand his decision, respect his decision. I'm running as an underdog in this race. I'm fighting to put the White House back on the side of working families, and a lot of people are responding.
No matter what happens in the future presidential primaries, Gore maintains that he is in the race until the very end, the convention in Atlanta in July. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
Even though it seems as if he has the Republican nomination clinched, Vice President George Bush was also campaigning in New York. Bruce Robertson filed this report.
Although running with a seeming insurmountable lead in delegate count, the vice president is maintaining a campaign schedule in front of the April 19th New York primary. With only Pat Robertson still in the race for the Republican nod, Bush spoke about the remaining stretch of the campaign.
For me, the worst part of this campaign is all but over. And I say worst because I don't like looking for differences with fellow Republicans. Somebody asked me today how come I wasn't debating in Rochester. I said, do you have combat pay up there for debating with another Republican? We've had 7 debates, cruel and inhuman punishment. And I don't want any more debates with Republicans, but I can't wait to take on whichever one of those 3 Democrats win the Democratic nomination.
Speaking before nearly 500 people, Bush observed that the primary process has not hurt the Republican Party, but now it's time to pull together.
And now I want to reach out to those who fought under different banners in the primary, Bob Dole and Pat Robertson, Jack Kemp, Pete DuPont, Al Haig, because we do share a common goal, and that's keeping the White House Republican. The immediate task is unity, but that's not a big job. We have so much more in common than what divided us, and I don't see great deep wounds in our party. They simply are not there. I happen to think the Democrats, in spite of all this hullabaloo on the other side, are going to be able to get their act together, too, and be more unified than I wish I thought they were going to be. But we face challenges that will never be met unless we meet him together.
Bush sounded a theme of continuing the Reagan administration policies at least another 4 years, and he believes the country wants the same.
I believe we do face a watershed election in 88. I've been part of an administration that's changed the basic direction of our public policy in this country. And now I want to lead the country in making the good changes last and building on them to bring prosperity to those who haven't benefited by this, the longest recovery in the history of the United States of America. The Democrats look at our Republican progress and they say, it's midnight in America. I had a letter from Governor Cuomo the other day talking about a pall over the future. They ought to take their blinders off and look at the sunshine. They ought to see where we were and where we've come from.
Specifically, Bush says he supports what he calls a capital gains differential, where the tax on capital gains would be lower than the straight income tax. Providing new businesses and jobs is the key to increasing revenue to the federal government, and providing an incentive to entrepreneurs to overcome the fear of risking an investment is the key to getting those new businesses established. Bush, however, would increase revenues without raising taxes.
I want to balance the budget, but I don't want to do it by raising taxes. I want to do it by keeping the economy growing and holding the line on the spending side of the equation.
Bush spoke in Schenectady, joined at the guest table by many key Republicans in the state Senate, including Senator Hugh Farley, Senator John Dunn, and Senator Roy Goodman.
For the Legislative Gazette, with the Bush campaign in Schenectady, New York, this is Bruce Robertson.
Some have been saying that Governor Cuomo has actually endorsed Jesse Jackson without endorsing him. I asked Fred Dicker how he saw the discussions between the governor and Jackson.
Well, the governor was effusive in his praise for Reverend Jackson. There's no question about that. Probably the most praise I've ever seen him heap on a politician. But when the governor was asked about that, he said, wait till you see what I do with Al Gore and Mike Dukakis, so let's wait to see what happens. A lot of people think there's some sort of behind-the-scenes scenario, Cuomo-Jackson friendship, maybe keep pressure away from the Tawana Brawley case, or perhaps Jackson might throw his votes to the governor at the Democratic Convention. Personally, I don't subscribe to either theory, but there is an awful lot of speculation.
The governor has nothing to lose, of course, by being very nice to everybody.
And something to gain, Alan, not only personally and politically, but there's no question from having spoken with some of his key aides that he's very worried about racial tensions in New York, and in New York City in particular, and I think he'd like to do what he can to ameliorate those problems.
The Jackson response.
Well, Jackson, is very interesting, was asked in connection with the Tawana Brawley case if he, Jackson, agrees with Tawana Brawley's supposed advisors that Mario Cuomo is a racist. And initially he ducked that question. He didn't even respond. Finally, when he was pressed, he said, well, not in my experience. Well, considering how strong the praise that the governor gave Jackson was, I was surprised, and I think a lot of other people were surprised as well, that Jesse Jackson wasn't a bit more forthright in his defense of the governor, who, quite clearly, has shown no signs publicly and, as far as I know, privately of being a racist.
And has been effusive on my show with me on the Capitol Connection over and over again of Jesse Jackson, and takes great umbrage at anybody else who seems to slur him.
No question.
Fred, the budget, what a mess.
Oh, yawn. You know, I've been joking with some colleagues of mine at the Capitol. I've done my best, Alan, to keep stories about the budget out of the New York Post. And it's not because I don't want to keep the public informed. It's because I don't think the public gives a damn about these.
It's interesting. I heard two young assemblymen on a local station one night saying that it's the media's fault that the budget isn't passed because they weren't putting enough pressure on them to do the right thing. I couldn't believe it.
It'd be nice if we could get them on the record. I mean, what a bunch of Mickey Mouse, second-rate political maneuvering. The Long Island Republicans are trying to say, we're the macho men. We can force our leader, Warren Anderson, and the governor to give us extra money for our nervous constituents on Long Island. And the governor and Mel Miller, the assembly speaker, are saying, no way, we're not going to let the Republican majority in the Senate run this state. Meanwhile, the budget really is passed. Let's be honest. Now, let's be candid.
Yeah.
Unlike previous years, for where all the budget was stalled and state workers missed their paychecks, etc., four of the five principal budget bills have already been passed. So we at least have 80% of a new state budget. And the likelihood is that within the next week or so, we're going to see that fifth bill passed. That's the local assistance portion of the budget.
Freddie, I want to go back to Warren Anderson. I have a scenario. You were one of the first people to report in your column and in other places that there was going to be trouble this year, and there was trouble this year between the Long Island Republicans and Senator Warren Anderson. And yet, there are some, and now there are some signs that Anderson had essentially agreed on a budget and that he had been embarrassed by the Long Island Republicans, and he wasn't able to hold his own majority. Now, I know that the governor has been very fond of Anderson in the past. Could it be that he is in his own way, by refusing to go along with the new demands by the Long Island Republicans on the budget, that he is essentially supporting Anderson?
Well, in some ways he is, but this time around, unlike the last few years, Alan, the governor isn't a player by himself. In the past, as we both know, the legislative leaders, Democrat and Republican, have tended to gang up on the governor. This year, Mel Miller, who I think we all agree foolishly aligned himself against the governor last year, is on the governor's side. So Mel Miller, who had to stick his neck out to get his own assembly Democrats to go along with the budget agreement, because there are always disagreements within these groups, is saying, hey, wait a minute, we can't let Warren Anderson's renegade members dictate to the state, because if we do, my members are going to start getting out of control, and I'm going to have problems as well. So I think that there's no question the governor likes Anderson, would like to help him, but he's not going to make a concession to Anderson when Mel Miller sees that as something that could spark a revolt within his own Democratic Assembly conference.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting when you talk about the alliance that used to exist between Miller and Anderson, that doesn't exist anymore, that the year that Miller's principal advisor, Norman Adler, who you know fairly well.
I knew him quite well and quite intimately for a few moments.
When he left and is in fact one of his, he's a professor now, but one of his jobs is running political campaigns for the Republicans, that detente or alliance between the Republicans and the Democrats collapsed. He had strong ties into both of those camps.
No question. I'm not sure, you know, that was a major factor. It could have played a little role, but I think the objective circumstances of the legislature being caught up in scandal and Mel Miller facing at least a potential revolt in his own ranks, and after all, he's only in his second year as Speaker, those things came together to make it clear to him that it was in his interest to be a nice guy with a very popular governor of New York.
Fred, Senator D'Amato was on a television show with me the other day, and
I'm sure he was honored, Alan.
And he made it clear that he was very interested, as you have reported in the past, in the governorship if Mario Cuomo went on. And he said he thought that Mario Cuomo was still a leading nominee for the presidency. Is he blowing smoke?
No. D'Amato may be thinking more of the presidency in 1992 than
he
is.
No, he meant this year.
This year. Well, I think he's certainly less of a likely nominee than he was just a few days ago when he really pulled himself out of accepting a draft. But there's no question D'Amato has great political ambitions in New York. He's a very able fellow in many ways. Certainly he's an excellent politician. And I think being the junior senator from New York in the minority in the U.S. Senate is probably awfully frustrating to him. And let's be frank about this. Let's be clear. Some of this revolt of the Long Island senators that we see delaying the budget now may, in fact, show the hand of Al D'Amato behind
yes, that's
it.
Right. That's
D'Amato's
right.
been making more and more moves to influence or to take control of New York State Republican Party. And Lord knows they could use some strong control because the party's in shambles now. As we both know, they can't even come up with a candidate to run against D'Amato's colleague and sometime nemesis, Pat Moynihan, who's running this year for re-election to the U.S. Senate.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post. The tolls on the New York State Thruway are going up. And that means commuters will be getting less mileage for their dollar. Brenda McMahon has the story.
The New York State Thruway Authority Board decided to raise a toll by 35%. This decision was made in an effort to repair the state's highways before the toll is phased out in 1996. Thruway commuters who used to pay 2.4 cents per mile are going to have to pay 3.1 cents per mile beginning on April 17th. Leslie Knopf, a spokeswoman for the Thruway Authority, explains the need for a toll increase.
Well, it is designed to be the only increase needed between now and 1996 when the Thruway is scheduled to be turned over to the state. And it was implemented because there is a need to rehabilitate nearly all the 559 miles of the thruway. And our current toll schedule would generate $1 billion for this purpose, but the actual need and the cost for this kind of rehabilitation is 1.7. So in order to address that shortfall, a new toll schedule has been implemented.
But what does the toll increase really mean to drivers on the thruway?
New York City to Albany, the trip currently runs $3.35 from at the moment. As of Sunday, it will increase to $4.35. Reverse trip Albany to New York City, which includes the Tappan Zee Bridge, where there is a toll collected in one direction southbound only as a round-trip toll, currently is $4.85, will go to $6.85.
Leslie Knopf, spokeswoman for the New York State Thruway Authority. The New York State toll will increase by 35% effective April 17th. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brenda McMahon.
A controversy has been stirring over an accusation in a Political Action Committee's newsletter and an assemblyman who called for the resignation of a controversial regent. Beth Engler is back with us now to tell us about it.
He is an evil troll with the lean and hungry look of a first-class ambulance chaser. Those were some of the comments written about New York State Assemblyman Arnold Proskin. The less than flattering descriptions were found in the Political Action Committee letter, African American Freedom Times. The newsletter slammed Proskin after he called for the resignation of State Regent Adelaide Sanford. Proskin says he's appalled by the remarks.
But it's something that doesn't belong in our society today, especially when it's just trying to throw gasoline onto a fire. And there's a problem that was perceived as a problem. They're attacking me because I question what Regent Adelaide Sanford had said. Yet Mrs. Sanford and I have been sat down in my office and we've been talking about what we're hoping is a solution to all of this. These people were not interested in that. They're interested in the issue. They're interested in fanning the fires and saying, "Oh, let's keep this issue burning and let's not worry about a solution." They didn't bother to check with Mrs. Sanford or with me to see what's going on.
Proskin called for Sanford's resignation after she was quoted by a Capital District newspaper as saying her academic agenda did not include white children. The Republican lawmaker says that Deputy Speaker Arthur Eve may have something to do with the article.
Well, I know that the individual who supposedly runs the newspaper had been on Mr. Eve's staff until there were complaints made, and then apparently he's not on his staff anymore. I do know that just before the article came out, someone who was from his staff came to my office and asked for a photograph of me, the very same photograph that was used in the newspaper.
The Legislative Gazette attempted to reach Assemblyman Eve, but he has not yet returned our calls. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Beth Engler.
And that's it for this week's Legislative Gazette. The show is produced by Brenda McMahon, and she had help this week from Paul Rosenthal, Bruce Robertson, and Beth Engler. We hope you enjoyed the show. You'll tune in next week to hear what's happening in and around the Empire State. Until then, I'm Alan Chartok. The Legislative Gazette is underwritten by the College at New Paltz of the State University of New York, presenting the Vladimir Feltzman Piano Institutes in April, May, and July.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the Legislative Gazette, a weekly newspaper on state politics with student internships available.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.